Welcome to Everything Belongs, a podcast for those living, creating, leading, and thriving while in the deep end of life. I'm your host, Madison Morgan, leadership coach, creative consultant, and speaker. I coach soulful visionaries and go-getting mavericks who desire to create art of their lives and take their work both deeper and higher. In this show, I'll be bringing you an overflow of conversations with my favorite thought leaders, teachers, healers, and creatives who inspire me to live more fully in my own power, worth, and wholeness, along with offering some episodes where I share my own practical insights, behind-the-scenes peeks into my process, and tools I use on my own journey. There will not be much we shy away from here because at this table, everything belongs. Therefore, you can expect me to ask the uncomfortable, juicy questions. You can expect that you'll hear people you disagree with on the podcast and maybe even ideas you've never previously considered. I trust you with your own discernment as we take this deep dive. You can expect to laugh, cry, learn, and be challenged by the guests as they share their diverse experiences and views of the world. It's my hope through learning to see that all of it belongs that you will develop a more sovereign way of holding yourself so you can playfully go after the life, relationships, and career you are made for, to let all parts of yourself have a seat at the table, to lead and create from your deepest truth and become your own source of validation, all because you finally know you're worthy of it. All that's required to get started, that you show up curious and willing. Let's dive in. Hello and welcome to today's episode of Everything Belongs. I'm so happy to have you here. It is an August day and it is Missouri where I live. And so it is sticky and hot and the sun is beaming in the window of my upstairs office. I've got a candle in here flickering and yerba mate tea drinking to give me that afternoon boost. And you might be able to hear the cicadas in the background because they are loud at this time of year. This morning, I actually had a conversation with today's guest, Nadia Payan, and it was so good to drop into this conversation with her. She's actually in Morocco, and so in this episode, you might hear the hum of children in the background, and also on my end, some neighborhood dogs. We had some vocal dogs in the neighborhood, but I want to introduce you a little bit more to Nadia's work before we dive in, because this conversation around creativity, being in our own creative energy, what it looks like to grow our capacity for grief, and what we can learn from children. Those are like the main things that we really dropped into in this conversation. We went so many rich places that I wasn't expecting to go when intending to speak to Nadia. Nadia, like I mentioned, is an educator and a guide and a speaker that's devoted to conscious creativity. They love beauty, meditation, their meditation guide. She is a nurturer of embodied interconnectedness, loves subtle energy, and believes herself to be a work in progress, a divine spiritual being, and also works with children, as you'll hear, as a Montessori teacher and guide. And I actually don't even know if she uses the word teacher. I think guide might be the more correct term. So in this episode, we got to cover so many topics, and what I adored the most about this conversation was the perspective that Nadia brings as someone who is a third culture person, someone who grew up where she's not from. Both of her parents are from different places, and then she grew up in the United States. So got to experience three different cultures in one, which is really its own kind of culture, very different than how I personally grew up. And so I enjoyed hearing her talk about creativity and children and grief and the difference of American thinking versus the kind of thinking that you might find outside of the United States, where in America we think more linearly in a line, whereas in other cultures and in indigenous cultures, the thinking is more circular. So you'll get to hear about Nadia's family. You'll get to hear about her experience with Montessori. You'll get to hear about all of the different ways that she experiences creativity and grief. And this was just a wildly human episode, one that we really could have kept talking for another couple hours that we had to cut off. So I hope that you enjoy this episode, and if you do after listening, of course, please connect with Nadia. She gives you some places where you can connect with her after the episode, and they're all in the show notes. But also please let me know on social media or by leaving a review what you most enjoyed about the episode, because hearing from you is my favorite thing. And these conversations become even more conversational when you get to take a part in them and let me know what you're liking and how you experienced it and what your biggest takeaways are. So without further ado, let's dive into this conversation with Nadia.
Nadia, thank you for joining me all the way from Morocco today. And it feels so, as we were saying before we hit record, such a cool thing that we get to be across the globe and have these conversations.
Yes, Madison, thank you for having me. I'm really excited for this conversation.
Yes. So you had said something before we began that really struck me as important to begin the conversation with, which was about your practice of staying grounded in moments of groundlessness. And I'm curious for you to let us in on that piece of what you've been doing to transition across the globe and how you're staying grounded right now.
Oh, okay. So I'm in Morocco right now. This is my mother's land. My mom is from here and I'm visiting family. I'm here for a little while and not as long as I'd like, but a long enough time. I also knew that like it would mean adjusting or readjusting or just being a lot more fluid, which can be experienced, as I said, as groundlessness. Like my regular things are not near me. My usual habits are not my own to follow anymore. I'm in a lot less of a leadership role in my own life and a lot more of a following role and just going with the flow and seeing what things are the same as I have like culturally in my own body from being raised by my mother, and what things are different from being born in the United States and raised there. And also just for the context, because my father is from Colombia, so that's going to be a whole other dimension. But I have certain practices that I tend to come back to, and I have a lot of them, and I'll do a mix and match. So right now, the things that are keeping me grounded here and just keeping me aware that I can always come back to myself, regardless of what's happening around me, are morning pages, which is a concept by Julia Cameron, who I adore and admire very much. I like want to be like the next Julia Cameron, low key. It's on the recording. It's going to happen. And the concept, essentially, for those who are not familiar with Julia Cameron's book, The Artist's Way, if you don't know it, read it, please, is to write 3 pages, ideally in an 8.5 by 11 notebook, real paper, every single morning. And it can be everything. I have been finding the practice to be everything from a brain dump to like teasing out something that, especially in this moment, like this exact moment of being here, observations or insights that I make about family dynamics that are the same, that are different, cultural dynamics that are the same, that are different. In what ways do I just completely blend into being Moroccan? In what ways can I just totally tell that I'm American? In what ways can I totally tell that I'm Colombian? And so I'm getting to carve out time and space for that exploration for myself every single day. Now, I also just want to say, it's not perfect. I'm also here with a 7-year-old, an 11-year-old, a 15-year-old, and 2 parents, my uncle and his wife. And so sometimes I make it to 3 pages. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes it's in the morning like it's supposed to, as the name indicates, morning pages. Sometimes it's before I go to sleep. There's a lot of fluidity in the practice, but I'm committed to the practice. So that's one of them. The other thing that I do generally when I travel is I'll build out like a little altar. So I'll take different items every time. I use a mala for meditation. And that will tend to be a very consistent one. But in this case, I took some other items that meant something to me, including like a bracelet with like the Colombian flag to be like, okay, Colombians, you're coming with me to Morocco. Here's so that, you know, ancestrally, you can know the other side of me or like literally the other side of the planet. And I just build that. But even then, you know, I've heard a lot of things of like for those who have altar building practices, and for me it's just as much spiritual as it is creative, that, you know, someone shouldn't touch your altar. Well, guess what? That kind of privacy doesn't really exist in Moroccan culture. So immediately I'm in someone's bedroom. I took over one of my littlest cousin's bedroom, and he came in and immediately started to say, what is this? What is this? What is this? What is this? And touching everything. So I checked in with my heart, was like, do I have any resistance to what's happening right now? Do I want to tell him to step away from all my things, or do I want to embrace this moment? He ended up rearranging the altar with me, and I explained to him what it was and what the purpose was, and I told him a little bit about every single object, and he was like, oh, let's put this here. I was like, yeah, let's do that. And it turned out to be a whole other creative experience. So those are the two things that are alive in my grounding right now for across the world, familial lineage travel.
I adore that. And thank you so much for sharing. I am also joined by the neighbor's dog. So if you hear the neighbor's dog, I don't know his name, but he's with us. So
love it.
I appreciate the way that you invited, you basically surrendered to what it is. I think that there's something really beautiful about having practices that can uphold you, but not keep you so rigid that if they don't happen the way that they like quote should happen, that they're not working or not supportive. I also am someone who I just accidentally realized that I have altars in every single room of the house, including all of the bathrooms. And
I love that.
Yeah. It just,
that makes me so happy.
As a creative person, it just feels like it adds an element of the sacred and prayer to life. I'm curious, you mentioned malas, if you were raised in any specific spiritual traditions or which ones that you've found are supportive for you.
So the very short answer is no. My Colombian side, they're all Catholic, and my father was raised Catholic, but eventually he decided to embrace atheism. And on my mother's side, everyone is Muslim. And she still identifies as Muslim. And I have a brother. So for the two of us, they just decided to just let it be. And there are definitely, if I were to guess, my guess would be that both of them interact with their religious upbringing. And I think my guess would be that for my mom, her religion is so infused with her cultural identity that as long as she was imparting cultural values, she was also imparting, you know, they were kind of hand in hand. So, and for her too, she doesn't agree with, she has her own interpretation of what's going down in Islam. So, so she has her own, like, sort of, let's say fluid again, like more loose interpretation of how things, how she wants to live that experience or not want to live it. And that also informed how I was raised in particular. So definitely, like, there are certain things that I think in the United States track as being in tandem with religious upbringing around, like, having strict parents or sort of like the home life is like the most important aspect of everything all the time. I think that tracks with you. You have more experience with that. So you let me know if I'm getting that right, because I don't know. But I did notice that people would get very confused with my, like, I'm currently recalling like high school and middle school in Miami, Florida, and people being a little like confused by having such a strong family structure, but no religion attached to it. And I come from two cultures that the family is everything. And it is vast, and it is deep, and it is important, and possibly like some of the most important aspects of living a life, period, end of story. So even here, my uncle doesn't say I'm his niece. He's like, you know, you're my daughter. And I actually realized I had a moment of my Americanism coming out where I said, oh, you know, my cousin, he's like my brother. And he goes, my uncle corrected me. He said, no, he's not like your brother. He is one. He is your brother. I was like, you're right. You are right. My bad.
Wow.
It's a different way. It's a different perspective.
Yeah. And even that small separation that you said, like my brother, like akin to, and he's just like, no, like this is
no.
Your family. This is your brother.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. And, you know, as you were saying, like, given my history with Christianity, my family of origin, my mother and my stepdad, the house I grew up was loosely Catholic, mostly non-religious. I actually chose Christianity later in life. My dad, my biological father, went to prison when I was 8 and came out born again Christian as a, you know, a tool for his own addiction and coping. And so that was I had an introduction to it, but I wasn't raised with this like strong Christian family values, although I am really curious about how American culture is influenced by American evangelical Christianity, which is very different than Christianity that's in Europe, and what sort of value system has been created. And unfortunately, I actually think that evangelical American Christianity has become akin to republicanism, and it's become very politicized. And so I almost feel like there's like, it's difficult to untether the two things in America right now, but I don't know that that's like the kind of Christianity that I personally like practiced it, but I culturally in America, like family values, republicanism, evangelicalism are all like merged as the same. So it is curious to me how that can, like outside of America, that can, those family values can be there without the infusing of political life and religious life.
You just opened up a whole door. Like one, I realize I don't know much about evangelical anything. I grew up in Miami, Florida, and that area is mostly foreign-born and mostly Latin American, which means it's mostly Catholic. And so when I think, I just realized that when I think of Christianity, for me, it's linked to Catholicism still. And I'm like, wow, I don't know what evangelicalism is.
It's definitely like, different than Catholicism.
Yeah.
Okay,
I believe you.
Yeah, I have a grandfather who immigrated from Italy who's very like traditional Catholic. And it's just like a... It feels cultural. It feels like a thing that exists. Like this is how it is, you know, where, and there's not a lot of daily practice around it. There's not a lot of like, our life is about this. Whereas in evangelicalism, it feels like it is everything. Your relationships have to be about it. Like the morning pages is like Bible pages, you know, like it's infused in everything. Whereas I experienced personally Catholicism through my grandfather, who's Italian, as cultural, a cultural religious, it just kind of informs the values, as opposed to in evangelicalism, your life must bend and bow down to this belief system.
I have so many questions now, because I know that, again, even the Catholicism that I've been exposed to is, has a Latin flavor to it. And so I know for sure that there are certain things where, if there's any historians listening to this, I'm sorry in advance. Just gonna say that right now. But like, I'm just thinking about how with colonization in the Americas in general, one of the methods of being able to convert was to like sort of layer different traditions together. And so you talking to bringing in that Catholicism being linked to cultural, having cultural links, I can see, or I can imagine how back in the day, it would actually be sort of like the perfect weaponized religion to be in the Americas to say like, oh, well, you need to convert. Your way is the wrong way. But look, by the way, there's familiar things here. We're just going to go ahead and take this and put it, let's just let it sit and simmer in the crock pot.
Yeah.
And like, be like, are you more comfortable now? Walk across this bridge with me.
Mm-hmm. A lot of indigenous European practices got folded in as well. Like you'll see a lot of Celtic and pagan traditions folded into Christian holidays, because I think that in that process, what I know about colonization as used by the Roman Empire to colonize, that the Roman Empire was very patriarchal And Christianity was the first religion in that region that was extremely attractive to people who were poor and people who didn't have affluence. And so it was a really in its origin, not intended, obviously, to be used as colonizing. However, to find a method to get the poor and underprivileged people to adhere to one thing was a fucked up and brilliant strategy on the part of the Roman Empire to force people to assimilate through something which was easy for people to accept, which was the Jesus message was very attractive. And so even early day Christianity wasn't inherently patriarchal. It was actually mostly women leaders. The first people Jesus like revealed himself to were women, and they were the first leaders of the church. But in order for colonization to be able to occur, it had to become patriarchal and to adhere to what the Romans were already doing. And that's how they used this very attractive message to colonize. So it infuriates me.
I am fascinated by what you've just shared. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to go down so many rabbit holes, but then we'll be here for 5 hours.
Yes.
By the way, I have visited Roman ruins in a past trip back to Morocco. So, the Romans are part of the Moroccan history too. So it's so fascinating.
I thank you for letting me share that. I didn't intend to even go there, but it like sparks this like anger in me because from my time in Christianity, I feel very close. Like whenever I feel personally close to the spirit of Jesus. And when I hear people talking about, like, I hear Christians in coffee shops where I live talking about like their version of this Christianity that's just patriarchal, colonized, whitewashed. I'm like, yeah, I know him. Like, you don't even know him. I get so frustrated.
You don't even know my homeboy.
Yes. So all of that to say, thank you for sharing a little bit about your background. And I mean, Mala, does that come from the Hindu tradition for you?
Sort of. So the way I, like many people at this point in time, was attracted to yoga. And I started, I think it was in 2014, I did my yoga teaching certification, but I did it knowing I was never gonna, I completed all of it, did my community classes and everything, ended up working with that teacher of mine in a longer term way, but I never got the official certification because I knew that I didn't have the language then, but I felt like, who am I to be doing this? Like, I have other skills. Let me focus on those. This is helping me get back to me. And I will say it changed my life, I believe, for the better. I was very interested and still am in like the philosophical aspects of it. And I love the fact that it has this way, I guess, from what I know of Islam too, like maybe somewhat similar to Islam. I'm not sure. That just occurred to me maybe by being here, but it has this way of sort of covering a lot of bases. Like, hey, did you need a physical thing to do? We got you. Do you need a diet? We got that too, girl. We got you covered. Like, do you need a way of being able to sit still for a while? That was me. Yeah, I do. Actually, I need to calm the anger in my heart, please. that I can't seem to figure out why it's there, what it's doing, or what it's trying to tell me. All right, here's this thing called meditation. And so I learned this from an energy work teacher of mine, Kenneth Hover, Jover. And he always says like that he's a guest of traditions, and I really love that. And that's what I would consider myself. I'm not like by any means like I'm not Hindu. I'm not Indian. But I am a really happy guest. I'm just like, there's something here for me, and I'm grateful that you all are willing to have me here. What can I do to share, or like, you know, share the little bits that I might understand with others. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my point of view. So that's a more recent thing, you know, in the last 10 years or so, or I guess 8 years. But that's something that I got to choose as an adult, where I was like, I think I need some, there's a lot of intuitive aspects to who I am as a creative, as an artist, as a human. And I'd like some grounding, and that was what was available. And I got lucky, I think.
Thank you for sharing that. It actually brings me perfectly into what I was really curious about asking next, because whenever I first found your work on Instagram and listened to some podcasts and realized, oh, we have some mutual friends. That's really interesting. I would love to connect. I realized that we both share this love of living as art. And that actually struck me as you were talking about the altars and your morning pages, because I'm like, those are practices that connect me to my sense of creativity, even whenever I'm not creating something that others would think is art, like tending the house and setting up my altars. All these things feel like life is art to me. And so I'm wondering how you came to this concept that life is art and what that even means for you to live as art.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I think where I'd like to begin is to talk about creativity. Right now, there's a contentious relationship with the word art, I believe. And it has to do with supremacy culture. The flavor that I think makes the most sense to me, that I'm like desperate to share with as many people as possible, is that it's very linked to living in global capitalism. And being global, like capitalism being one of the tools for supremacy culture to exist. And as I understand it. So I grew up since age 6 playing the violin. And the thing that taught me was that there were moments in time where if I was not threatened by my parents to practice my scales or like do what my teacher told me, I would not have practiced. And I would, but like, you know, at that time they were instilling a sense of discipline, externally speaking, so then I could hopefully develop it internally. It worked to an extent. I still struggle, but it's there. And I just realized that, yes, there were moments in time in that relationship with that instrument where it was just about showing up, and you need to clock in the technique. You need to learn how to hold the bow. You need to learn how to move your hand to be able to do a vibrato. You need to understand where the hands go. You need to be able to become literate. Like there's so many different pieces that come together. I never got super literate in music, but I did develop quite an ear. And so as I matured in my relationship with this instrument, everything just got deeper and deeper and deeper, and it made room for the skill that I acquired in that craft that is considered artistic, entre guillemets, like in quotes. It also became a doorway or a pathway to flow, which is usually like, and it's the reason why I say the relationship with art or living as art is contentious is because people right now, I have heard over and over again, people tell me that they're not creative because they don't know how to paint, because they don't know how to draw, because they don't know how to play an instrument. Oh, you're creative. You worked as a designer. You worked as a creative. I'm like, creative is not a job. I had a skill that we have labeled at this in this modern moment as a job that I can get paid for. And that's what I did and still do to live in capitalism, period. That's all. I make, you know, like, that's the job. That's the work. It gets messy because there's also flow. There's also a lot of like presencing myself, and not every job that's available in capitalism has those aspects to it. So again, I feel very privileged because a lot of people in my life, outside of my life, in a lot of other parts of the world, being able to go down that pathway and be like, I think I'm going to still keep going and try to make this my job to survive in this thing. It's no sense. Like, I'm gonna, yeah, yes. So I hope that makes sense. But for me, the soapbox that I want to be found dead upon is the one that says that the whole, like, we are creative beings. Being creative is innately a part of being human. The idea that it is a label that gets externally placed upon us is a result of capitalism. But in reality, I mean, ingenuity is creativity. Invention is creativity. And this is present in every single culture since the beginning of time, or humanity, human culture, the culture that I know about. And so like any time that someone looked at something and said, ah, I'm going to make something else with that. To me, that's art. That's a possibility of saying like, oh, look at this thing that I've created. Every single time someone had like a thought that maybe varied from the status quo, which is everybody all the time, by the way, whether we, you know, we make choices to keep it to ourselves or not, but those thoughts are floating in everybody. And sometimes when there's room made for somebody to be like, you can tell it to me. I've been told a lot of secrets, so I just love it. I'm just like, oh, you got a, that's a rebellious thought. I like it. Tell me more. The invitation is here. But that's art too. That's art too. And so for my parents that it wasn't available to them, they did not have access to things like learning a musical instrument or learning a craft that is now considered creative. They're very creative. Most of my furniture growing up was made by my dad. All of the food, still, to this day, my mom cooks every single day. Every single one of those meals is different. Every single one of those meals is an act of creativity, an act of art. Yeah. So I think that, yeah, it's everywhere.
When you talk about food.
Actually, I want to say one more thing.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I also believe that, here's my hope. This is like my little prayer. I hope that as people realize that art is in them and art is them, like they are art, and that it can be infused, that energy can be infused in every single thing that they do, there's a power in that. There's a power in that, and that is why it's so detrimental to this power over power under dynamic that we're in on a global scale. So I just feel like when people realize that part of the reason why they feel like they need to buy something before they can make it, because it's not going to come out perfect, that is a global system robbing you of your creativity, something that's already living in you. Or when you create something, I take paints everywhere I go. So me and the children, we started painting not too long ago. And the seven-year-old, worlds were created, slides with a pink moon, all this stuff. Beautiful. The 11-year-old immediately, I could see was, and this is important too, just the discernment, the skill development, right, the craft, but could not imagine necessarily something on his own. Could not just be free with it. Needed it to be perfect. Needed it to be good. And I would say, this is not, we're in family right now. We're not creating something. We're not painting to pass a test. We're painting to have fun. Paint. See what happens when you mix this color with that color. See what happens if you do a squiggle instead of a line. It was very tough. So we get instilled with that sense of our creative power being taken away from us, that we need to look exterior for somebody else to grant us our creative power from a very, very young age.
I have distinct memories of actually around the age of, I had a sister come live with us. So she's a stepsister. We have a sister who has, her dad, my mom type situation. She was living in a difficult home environment. So was adopted by my mom and came to live with us when she was six. I was six or seven. I have a distinct memory of telling her she wasn't allowed to use, very big sister of me, she wasn't allowed to use my crayons unless she colored in the lines. It's like, you cannot use my art supplies unless you do this properly, which
amazing
could be like a, for sure, it shows my need to control everything, which is great. But
it could also be
a Virgo thing. But like what you're saying of like, this needs to be done correctly. This needs to be done. It's like you said, this is family time. Like we're not doing this for that right now.
I still infused skill because I have nice paints.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's talk about the, let us talk about, because the two are always intertwined. So for you, your version was, let's color in the lines.
Yeah.
And you can, only you at that age, whatever age you were, know exactly what the spirit of that comment was, right? You mentioned controlling. So we'll go with that. For me, I wanted them to understand that it was not time to just mess everything up, especially the seven-year-old. It's a different time. He'd had no problem experimenting with all the paints. I was like, please, all the paints together, we'll just make a brown. Just trust me on this one. I already have brown. You can use this one. but just sort of the technique, I had watercolors. And so I was like, you dip the paintbrush in the watercolor, I mean, in the water, and then you take some paint and, you know, just showing them how. And then they went on their own, you know. It's funny. It's funny how I have this memory of being in the Montessori environment, which I'm a part of, and the children, this is like ages 3 to 6, the children were all having art class. We have someone, a wonderful Colombian artist, come in. The kids don't even realize what's going on. I'm like, you all don't even know. You all are so, you have the best life ever right now. But he's an amazing artist. And he comes and he teaches them art. And one day I was there and decided to interview the children. And I asked them, you know, they're like dipping paint and moving the brush around. And like, are you an artist? Every single one of them said yes. And one of them, I asked, like, how long have you been an artist? I think at the time, this child is like either 5 or 6 years old. They totally responded like, oh, like 7 years. I'm like, yo, that feels accurate. Like, not even going to question this right now. But like every single one of them knew. Yes, of course I'm an artist. I'm making art. Hello, Miss Nadia. Where you been?
There's a quote I saw, and I wish I had taken a screenshot so I could actually reference who it was. It was an Indigenous woman from the United States, who lives in the United States, and was saying that living is art, like basically saying the same thing. Like with capitalism, we believe our purpose is to, and this is a botched version of her brilliant thought anyway, but to distill the idea down, it is that we have bought into this idea that our purpose is a job and something that we can make money off of. But many Indigenous practices have been teaching that like being your weird self is art, like being your human self and having experiences in your body is art. And it reminds me of what you're saying. And it brings me into, well, I guess my first question is, I want to know some of the things that you've learned about yourself being in the Montessori environment and being around children. Like, how do you feel like that perspective has brought you back to like actual human ways?
I love this question. Okay. So I feel the need to add some context here. So I'm currently working part of my time in my mom's business, which is a little Montessori preschool and kindergarten. And the thing that I need for people listening to this to know is my mom did things her own way. The preschool kindergarten is actually in the home I grew up in. And before she started that business, she was a Montessori educator. So like I was able to go to the school where she was working at that point in time. I will not name it, but because they don't have this policy anymore, but at that point in time, it was a private school and the teachers were allowed to bring their children free tuition. My schooling, as soon as we moved back into the United States from like age 4 or so, was Montessori. My mom, before starting that school in the house, she was a Montessori educator at a private school. And so basically the deal that they had back then, and I know that this doesn't exist for them anymore, excuse me, but that school allowed for the educators or people on staff to have their children come to the school free of tuition. So essentially from age 4 to age about 9, I was in a Montessori environment. So, and then when she left to start her own business, I was entering the 5th grade, and that's when I switched to public school. But that means that then Montessori was literally in the house. And so, I stayed just, and she was my mom. And those things influence like how a person shows up. So Montessori has been a part of my life for all of my life. So I'm trying to remember the original question because I know that I wanted to provide context. Oh, how yes. children have.
Yeah, how children have impacted your relationship to yourself and just your relationship to mm-hmm. humanity in general.
Yeah, and I think it's important to talk about Montessori in this moment too. There's a lot of Montessori, that methodology for both structure and for organic growth to happen, I'll say. And I think that that's the combination that really inspires me right now as an adult and as a creative. Also, like, and I can speak to specifics around that if you're interested, but I'll just name that quickly. Like, that combination is very powerful to me. And I can see it in my life in a lot of different ways, not just in Montessori, but also in being someone who has two cultures at home and raised in a third culture. So I'll just name that there. But there's something about that combination of having scaffolding or structure and that is encouraged and in service of just an organic way of being, a natural way, a natural pace, like what's natural to an individual or a different person. And in terms of the children themselves, oh my goodness, I work with ages like, I work with 3 to 6 mostly. And sometimes if I get lucky, I'll get to hang out with some 2.5-year-olds in some afternoons that are getting ready to enter the Montessori environment in a more full-time way. And I decided that my purpose was to be in service of creativity. And I can't think of a better group to represent that kind of energy than really young children who are still just sort of sorting out literally everything. Like, their brain is developing, their bodies are developing. They're like, why can't I pick my nose in public? It doesn't make that they don't know the rules yet. They're learning the rules all the time. And so I get inspired by the children that I'm around to be myself, because unapologetically so, to lead and to follow, because they're doing both all the time as well. They love to challenge themselves. It's fascinating and so inspiring when I see a child go after learning, and it makes me think, okay, in what ways am I doing this, or in what ways am I not doing this in my life right now? Like, am I doing it with the same kind of vigor, or can I do it with the same kind of vigor as this child is going for, like, being able to pour water from one container to another? Because they will practice. They will practice the skill until they've got it down, and then they'll be like, ready for the next one. or they might even say they're ready for the next one before they have it done. But, and let me think, what else? There's so many things I learn from them all the time. I just feel like they're the best teachers. I often say, like, I'm teaching them, like, the human survival skills of, like, how to survive in this time, like reading, writing, numbers, science, holding heavy things with two hands instead of one, walking, running, jumping, you know, things that'll help them move through life as a human when it makes sense, right? Visual discernment, audio discernment, those kinds of skills. And they're teaching me about how to live and how to be no matter what, how to stay present, because time literally doesn't make sense yet. That happens when they're a little bit older. They start getting a sense of what time means, that there's a past and there's a future. But the little ones at age 3, the only time that exists is now. And it is humbling to be around people like that, with that carry that wisdom just by living. So that's how they inform my life, I would say. Mm-hmm.
That is so beautiful. And I think some of the things that I'm hearing you say, and just to mirror this back, is that, well, I guess I'll say it this way. From my observation, it seems like having a really rich relationship with children and also multiple cultures, like the capacity that you have to understand multiple cultures because of your experience as a third culture child, having parents from different cultures than each other, and then raising you in a different culture than they were both raised in the third culture. It just feels like a how I'm experiencing this conversation and you and your energy is a capacity for understanding things through many different facets and lenses and how they can work together cohesively. And also like the differences in them that make them really beautiful, and also where there could be challenge, and also how that challenge like can be really beautiful and teach you like, yeah, I'm gathering so much wisdom from all of these little pieces that you're sharing, especially how it gets woven together in children, because children don't really have any pretense. They just are as they are.
No, they don't.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Well, there's so much more I could dive into here, but there was another thing I wanted to ask you about. Are you at a good place for transitioning into something different?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go.
So in the beginning of us getting on this call, you had mentioned capacity for grief, and it just feels really fitting given that you're talking about holding multiple different contexts and textures and cultures. And you mentioned, you know, as the world is becoming smaller in a way, as we are becoming more globalized and more access, like you're in Morocco, I'm in Missouri, we're talking right now, that we have to grow our capacity for grief. And I'm really curious what your relationship to that has been, given all that you hold and allow to flow through you because of your life experience.
Yes. I think capacity in general is in a stage, I think on a collective scale, of needing to grow or getting to grow. And part of what's happening and has been happening is I wish I had better words to say this, but I think that like as evolution happens, as things change, as we continue to embrace changes or deny them or reluctantly go with them, whatever it might be, you know, I don't super love living in this. When I think about what we're up to on a global scale as a species, I don't super love what we're exploring personally. That's my own, you know, like we're exploring a lot of violence, a lot of hate. We're exploring a lot of like wartime themes and oppression, domination. These are themes that we're exploring very deeply, I feel like, on a planetary scale as human beings. I do feel like if I can zoom out and be like, yes, everything is all interconnected, we're all fine, and I'm in the super meditative state and I can feel that awareness, then it doesn't mess with me so much. And then I zoom back into my human life and it breaks me. It breaks me every time. It breaks me apart. And I do believe that, like, I know, for example, right now I'm having a lived experience sometimes of realizing while I'm here with my family that things that made me different in the United States growing up, that just like, no, people would be like, why are you doing that? Or like, why do you think that way? Or like, that doesn't make sense. I heard that a lot. Like, what you're saying doesn't make sense though. I'm understanding now that I'm here amongst family that it does make sense. The location was just different. It has a cultural sense to it. It's just not in the United States or not in Miami, Florida, where the cultural context is American and especially also Latin American. But here, there are things that I do that I know I've gotten confusion or pushback or judgment towards that no one quite, like, it makes all the sense how I'm acting or what I'm saying or how I'm thinking about things. And then vice versa. There are moments in time where I know I can tell by like the surprised look on a different family member's face. And I'm like, ah, here's my cultural frame of being American or being Colombian coming to life. And it's in contrast with the one that is here. And so the grief in that of like the diaspora life, I don't know how to say that word, but like just basically like someone who is of a few different places, but like a result of having of immigration and settling in a place that's not your own. The United States being the place where my parents ended up settling. France was where they settled before then. And before then they were in their respective continents. and countries. Like, for example, actually, I just want to name this. I actually always find it super fascinating that in the United States, people will find out that I'm traveling to Morocco and they'll say like, oh, you're going to Africa. But they won't do the same. And they'll name a whole entire continent to describe where I'm going. But they won't do the same. Like, if they're talking about, they'll name Miami, Florida. Or they'll say in Florida, like people ought to know. I'm like, why didn't you just say North America? I've always wondered this. But I understand intellectually that the reason why is because the cultural context is, I know more about this place, and Africa is a faraway place. And so all those countries, this enormous continent with all this richness and diversity and different ways of interacting, and like there's so much here, we're going to lump it into one word. I'm like, oh, it's cool. So there's grief in that. You can hear it in my voice, I hope. And there's grief in understanding that some things will have slipped away just because my parents combined and we ended up in another place. So there are things about being Colombian that will never be a part of my framework for life. And there are things about being Colombian that are. Same with Moroccan, same with American. But the things that are lost, that I will never be able to recover, deserve their time and space to be mourned. And I think that as we become more global, and as like people choose to homogenize or not homogenize, I'm not sure how to describe this, the interchange is happening no matter what. Sometimes forcefully, sometimes peacefully, the whole spectrum is there. And the grief can still happen, that process of mourning what was lost that you may never know still will need space or does need space, because so much is getting lost every single day. Another example I can think of is with my family, we're speaking in French to one another because I don't speak the Moroccan dialect. And so we're actually, Morocco used to be, it's been a colony for a few different places, but more recently before becoming a kingdom, its own kingdom, it was a French colony. And so my mom's generation is kind of the last generation who had to do like their schooling in France. I mean, in French. And so like my uncle, who's a little bit younger, was able to do schooling in both languages. It's just very complex, this whole thing. And so sometimes I wonder to myself, like, wow. And when I speak Spanish, I don't speak with a Colombian accent. I speak with an American accent who has heard Spanish their whole life. It's a very specific kind of trajectory. So people know, oh, she's an American. But clearly she probably has a parent or two that is from here. That means things have gotten lost. Very, very real things have gotten lost. Just in my own lived experience, it's kind of like the art of being with what is, because it is what it is. I can learn the dialect, but it will never be part of my ecosystem in the way that it would be had I just been fully Moroccan, born and raised here. See what I'm saying? Am I making sense?
Yes, you're making so much sense. And I'm really, I can feel, I can feel it in my body as you're talking. I really appreciate that. And what I'm hearing as you're saying, being with what is, the way that I understand that through the experiences I've had is I personally have 6 siblings and none of us have the same 2 parents. And so it's very difficult to know who family is because my family is not shared by everyone in my family. And there's contentious relationships in a lot of those relationships. And so my family isn't like, no one in the entire world shares the same family as me. And it's hard for me to sometimes explain. And like what, as I'm hearing you explain this, it feels in texture, the closest thing to the grief that I experience around not like land and culture, although that exists within this in its own way too, because everyone comes from their own different places and has different cultures that have been assimilated and adopted in these dynamics. But the way I'm hearing and relating to what you're saying is in my personal life, there's a sense of accepting what it is, and in accepting what it is and taking responsibility for my part and relating in good ways, in ways that I feel really happy to be relating, there's always a grief present. And that isn't necessarily a wrong thing, but it just is. It's what it is. But Nadia, I really appreciate you sharing that about the capacity to grow room for grief, because I think what I'm hearing is, even if someone can't understand the cultural context of what you're saying, or the grief of loss around land in the conscious, I think a lot of us are realizing a grief around loneliness due to the pandemic, yes, or a grief around realizing that we are, colonizers or settlers of lands that are not our own, and well, where do we belong? And so I think a lot of the lack of belonging that a lot of people feel, and the loneliness a lot of people feel, although influenced by the pandemic and, of course, like modern life, most people who listen to this are in the West and American, Canadian, Australian, European. And so I'm just hearing a sense of like, what would it be like if we included grief as a part of our life, instead of pretending that displacement or feeling like we don't belong or whatever it is doesn't exist.
I really am so excited by what you've just shared. And I want to tie in another theme and sort of cross-pollinate.
Please do.
What if understanding that grief is present regardless, right? What if you had a conversation with it through creativity, through a creative act, through your art as life, like what might happen then? And I think that that's something that people, that's like where that innate creative power comes into play, because I don't know what I would create to express my grief might be completely different than somebody else. I might go soft. I might go hard. You know, like there's so much room. And that would be the invitation I would want to have people explore, is what might happen if we explored that. Like once, I think that's the gift that exploring ourselves creatively can really give us, if we're willing, is having that possibility to explore what we have an awareness around. So if someone's listening to this right now and being like, oh, my heart is heavy, my body is heavy, or however grief shows up, you know, in, for me, it's heart heavy and constricted. For somebody else, it might be something different, but you're like, ooh, that's where grief is. There you are. What might be something not to alleviate or have it go away, but to experience it in a way that is supportive, or a way that can honor what that feeling is. And you don't need to have a whole, like, I have a very literal story personally, like you said, like with land and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Wonderful. And you also mentioned, and I'm so happy you did, a more abstract global context of what could be creating grief and within a person's being. And so just exploring that and seeing what might come up. And I also want to add that for me, like I have had weight training practices, like using a kettlebell and being like, this is my spiritual practice. And this was mostly to move anger in my body and really feel it. Where I would do a really intense workout and push my body to the edge. But before I started, I would place that intention while holding my, just with all my heart and soul, be like, in this movement, in this kettlebell swing will be all this anger and frustration that I'm feeling right now, or all this grief. And at the very end, I'd lay down, do my stretches, and cry. And so just realize, I say that example because I don't want people to only think that it's like making pretty things on paper or writing the next novel that's going to be published, blah, blah, blah. Like, no, this is really how your life can be art, in a way that supports you first and foremost, and gets you back. And once you start realizing like, oh, I can do this for myself, then so many doors open. I can do this with others. I can do this in a community. I actually, when I do it for myself, it automatically supports the community around. I can make a community. There's so many possibilities that open up. So yeah, I got on a tangent there, but I really felt inspired.
Yes, I'm so thankful that you did, because something that personally I work through around living as art is like, who am I to do this when there's suffering? And I think it really needs to be said that part of living as art, at least for me personally, and what I'm hearing you say, is including the grief, and that actually informs the necessity of beauty, not necessarily in, you know, creating a beautiful piece of art, but a beautiful life, a life that is rich. And I love that you brought in movement, because movement is a really big way that I also move emotion and grief and anger specifically, because in relationships, it's more difficult when other people are present to access my anger. But when it's like moving my body, I can really land there. So goodness, I have some rapid fire for you. Are you ready to do some rapid fire, or is there anything that you want to loop back and bring into the fold before we do that?
I have one more thing. Mm-hmm. And it's, I would like to invite the possibility that beauty, beautiful or beauty in general, like, can be found in everything, including what's ugly.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of beauty in death. And I'm someone who does eat animals. And so, and also, I guess, talking about the whole cultural context thing, one thing that was very present in my upbringing was a repetition whenever we ate meat to remember that something died and that this was a living thing before. And it's specifically, I remember my mom saying, like, you know, in English, we have other words for things. So like, instead of saying that something is like a cow, we would say beef, or it's something like this, right? Like, I'm just trying to come up with a quick example.
Yeah, so like for, it's not for the us, animal.
Yeah, we don't just say the animal that had to die for us to live, right? And so I grew up with my mom being like, this is chicken. This is a chicken. Like, please understand that, like, it's not, doesn't come in this chicken breast form. It was, it's a bird, and this is the bird. And she was always very adamant about making sure that we understood that. And even to this day now, like, I still cook animals and I eat them, and I always take a moment. And I think with the wanting my interest in yogic philosophy and getting to study that, where it's a lot of being a vegetarian, I've actually now, like, regardless of what I'm eating, whether it's plant, fungi, or animal, I'm always thanking for that sacrifice, because, and when you start bringing that into the conversation of art and beauty, anger being a flavor of fear, grief being also, I think, a flavor of fear.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things can be coming back to that, so some sort of flavor of a lot of the things that we don't like to experience. I find usually when I go deep enough, the umbrella of fear can cover a lot
mm-hmm.
for me. And so in what's possible when I understand that in everything that I'm doing, it involved death and grief in order for the beautiful thing to happen. Paper, the tree gave its life. That's mm-hmm. a whole entire system of wisdom that's gone forever for me to be able to write my morning pages. I mean, what? Mm-hmm. How do I not see the beauty and bow down with so much respect and humility? Like, how do I not see my morning pages as like art? Because also I guess I could go the other end of the spectrum where I say, well, then in that case, I can't do anything. But then what am I doing with this life that I've been given, right? Like, what am I up to? Like, no, I'm in this human body. I want to live a human life.
Yeah.
I don't want to just watch it pass me. I want to engage and interact like the children do, like a creative being does, right? Like, they're like, well, I'm here now, let's go. And like, what's this thing? I'm supposed to walk on it? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, it's called a balance beam. I'm supposed to fall off it? No? Okay. Like, that's the attitude I want for the rest of my life and my entire life as much as possible. And it involves the whole spectrum. So mm-hmm. as opposed to thinking, I don't know, I feel like life and death, and so like that beauty and that ugly are pressed up against each other anyway. And if I approach it from that relationship or that sort of like more relational way, then there's a lot of room. There's a lot of room to explore, to be with, to create, to acknowledge, to bring awareness, all those things.
I'm so grateful that you went there with this, because it really, I just finished Bell Hooks All About Love, and the conversation that she has around death is one of the final chapters in the book. And I read it yesterday, and it's very present. It's actually, you know that my grandmother died last week. And so death has been on my mind a lot. And so I spoke about that with a friend yesterday about how death and life they're connected. They're the same. And in American culture, we tried to pretend that that's not a thing. And in my history with evangelical culture, it's life, 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 resurrection, and then more life. And then death is of the enemy, or like the devil. And it's so puritanical and disconnected from reality and disconnected from, let's just say there is life after death. Okay, cool. Well, we chose, I believe, to have these human experiences. And in doing that, we chose to experience death, not just our own, but death of material around us. And also when we understand ecosystem, we see how that everything plays a part in that. And so it really enlarges my heart space to hear you talk about this, because understanding that I don't have to be so puritanical and perfect. And actually, I think what I'm observing, and I don't know if you share these observations, but I'm observing happening to Gen Z, who's just a little bit younger than me, is this guilt and shame for existing. And we're observing really high suicide rates among that generation. And that's influenced by a number of things, a lot being technology and social media. But I also see this nihilism and this hatred of existence, that we are so bad, we cause harm, we are, pillaging the earth and we're killing. And there's validity to that. And there's a denial of death involved in that as well. And I think that's a cultural issue. And I just sometimes wonder what will happen as we, like you said, increase our capacity for grief and also our own humanity. Because then maybe we won't have to act in ways that are as detrimental to the earth when we get back in the rhythm of what life and death really mean. So all that to say, you've unlocked even more curiosities for me around this topic.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I'm really sitting with that. I think one of the things that I've observed with my own Americanness is I have a tendency to think in a line when I'm thinking about things through my American perspective or my American culture. And then I have a tendency to think more like in a circle when I'm sort of using, I'll say my mom's influence. So I'll say that, and I don't know how much of this is, I'm hesitating because I actually don't know if this is linked to Moroccan culture or not, but this is just me. And so in a line, life and death would be on opposite ends, but I feel more and more that they're actually the same point on the same line. They're just pressed up against each other because every single, like what you were talking about. And so, I don't know what's going to happen to the planet. I do hope that as people, for me, I feel it's very simplified, but I just hope that any child that I can influence to continue embracing their own humanity as they move through being in the United States, or any adult anywhere in the world that I can encourage in whatever way, shape, or form that they're willing to receive from me, to understand that they are just creative powerhouses by nature, that having access to that creativity and that creative power, reclaiming it and understanding that it's innate to who you are, it makes a lot of room for a lot to exist all at once. And so I find that it makes it easier to embrace other worldviews, not necessarily needing that you need to take them on your own, but just understanding that, you know, okay, I have my truth and you have yours. And I think it makes more room for that. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's linked to where they're going to see my idealism now, but my hope would be that as more and more people understand that difference is actually revered in a creative way, in a creative life. We need it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we'd all be the same and it would be boring. No two trees are the same. Mm-hmm. That's why we like looking at the landscape. I'm looking at a landscape right now. I'm like, none of them are the same.
Yeah.
And that's what we're, I think we've maybe on a global scale have gotten disconnected from. And I'm curious to see what might happen if on a global scale we could come back to it. And to me, I mean, I don't think I'm going to influence things on a global scale. But I do believe that, like, I'm probably not the only one thinking this way. And someone else is going to have a different flavor of this exact conversation with somebody else. And their name is going to be Sun Maddie and Ia Dad. I'm like trying to play on our names, but it's not working. and they're recording a podcast right now. And, you know, like, and somebody else that would never listen to this podcast because it's in English and that's not what they speak will be listening to that one, you know, like, and so there's like a mix of trust that we're all interconnected and also embracing like the work that I'm here to do or like what I feel called towards, which is sharing this softening of like, maybe your identities don't need to be so rigid. Maybe you can actually hold multiple perspectives at once. Sometimes being in that linear way is very helpful for me to get things done. Sometimes being in that more fluid, flowy way is very helpful for me to feel connected to community, right? Mm-hmm. Right now, as we are going to move into the rapid fire questions, all of my family is ready to go and refuses to leave because we do things together. I don't know what we're going to do, but like I can see them through the screen, the glass window from the balcony that I'm on. And they've got their cute outfits on. They've got their backpack on. My uncle's chilling, but he definitely was motioning earlier.
So sweet.
But that's because it's a different cultural setting. And so it's just like, well, we wouldn't leave her here. No, if we're going out, we're all going out.
She's not like a sister. She is a sister.
She is. Yeah. I'm not like his niece. I am not his niece. I am his daughter. When my mom is not around, I am his daughter. Mm. You see, it's such a big difference. So I think that there's a lot of beauty possible for holding both, and they're very different. And sometimes it's going to get weird and uncomfortable or, you know, like it's just not going to work. Mm-hmm. We'll try things out and they'll be learning experiences, dare I say failures. And that's okay.
Mm. Well, I appreciate the, you know, extra time that we've taken. I even pushed back my next meeting because I was enjoying hearing what you were sharing so much. And I do want to honor your family time. So let's dive into these rapid fire.
I've been loving this conversation too.
I know. I'm like, I know, and I trust you that if you had a hard stop that you would be like, hey, I gotta go. And I appreciate you for honoring yourself and knowing that you would do that. So thank you for the extra time.
Yeah, I know.
So you actually already answered the first question, which was, what is your spiritual background? So I'm going to move on to the second, which is, how do you know when you know?
Ooh, that's a great question. I feel peace in my body.
Mm. What identities have you had to let go of to own your fullness today?
Belonging. Mm. I would say that would be some of the biggest ones. That's the biggest one.
Mm.
I stopped trying to belong.
Curious if you found yourself. Go ahead.
No, I stopped trying to identify as someone who belonged somewhere or to something.
Have you found, out of curiosity, more a deeper sense of belonging since letting that go?
Yes, actually.
Yeah, it's not interesting.
The belonging is more on a, it's always so nice. The belonging has to do with just, I softened what that meant to me.
Mm.
And so in that softening, I was able to open up to well, I'll name, like, you know, for a long time I wanted to belong in the United States or belong more in Miami or not be the mix that I am or like whatever. And in deciding that, like, I will never truly belong in the United States. It is my home in many ways, and it is also not my home in many ways. Mm-hmm. We're new there. We mm-hmm. just got there. And in embracing that, it made room for curiosity. Mm-hmm. And so I started asking more questions about things about myself, to myself, about how I interact with American culture. And it got me to a different space. And more I find that that's invited in relationships into my life where there's a deep sense of belonging, and also a relationship with myself where there's mm-hmm. a deep sense of belonging.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. What are you most enjoying learning right now?
Being with family.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different. I didn't have this luxury growing up because all my family was very far away all the time. And so it's nice to kind of get annoyed at a cousin, you know?
Yes.
like what a gift.
Yeah.
Stop sorting through my things.
Yes.
That's not yours to touch, my dear. Who can do more push-ups? You know, these things that I didn't have that growing up.
Mm-hmm. What does grace mean to you?
Oh, I love this word. My understanding of it right now is, I would say, being mm-hmm. soft and being with what's like what we were talking about. Actually, I'll say exactly how we said it earlier, like being with what is.
Mm-hmm.
And being soft about it, not like judging it too harshly if we can manage it, or not at all, even if we're lucky.
Yeah. I'm personally trying to practice a softer gaze. I'm like, I'm piercing and sharp as hell. Like, what would it look like to have a softer gaze towards myself, and also definitely those in my life who mirror to me that maybe I could be softer. So I appreciate your definition. What is your go-to coffee shop order?
Cappuccino.
Mm.
or café con leche, like just a coffee with milk. Mm-hmm. I like coffee with some cream and sweetness. I'm mm-hmm. not going to lie.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. One of the local coffee shops where I go uses honey and whole like whipping mm-hmm. cream. And
ooh.
Since discovering whipping cream in my coffee, like I'm like, I don't know if I can go back to half and half. Like I'm just full on heavy whipping cream.
That stuff is good. So also, good. I have been one to enjoy coffee with coconut cream.
Ooh.
like from yeah. the, you know, like, I mean, I don't usually go out and get my own coconuts, but so I get the canned one. Mm-hmm. That is a special. That's not going to be my go-to order yeah. anywhere, but it's like such a special treat. I'm just like, I can taste the richness of the oil from the coconut sort of like coating the inside of my mouth, and like mm-hmm. the richness of the coffee. I just feel like I'm having the most exquisite life in that moment.
Yes, that is luxury, but that's like the
yes.
Well, the final question is, what do you want?
I want to live as art.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to live my best creative life. And I'll say, actually, I want to live as creativity, as my pathway to my spirit, to my own spirit and mm-hmm. connection to the divine. That's what I want all the time.
Beautiful. Nadia, I just so appreciate this conversation and the unhurried manner in which it happened. I know for those listening, we'd had to reschedule, and there was with my grandmother's passing, and then Nadia's in Morocco. And I just appreciate, Nadia, that you made this happen in family time, and also have enjoyed getting to hear little snippets of family in the background. It's been really beautiful. I've really appreciated it.
I've loved it too. And yes, I'm always trying my best to trust the timing. That's something I've learned, and to be flexible. The children teach me that.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm really happy that you I really appreciate actually that you actually shared with me in that moment that something big had happened. There was a big occurrence in your life, and that it was going to take some energy to on your part to process or to begin to process that. Mm-hmm. And that type of honesty is like I love it. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That's part of being human. Mm-hmm.
Well, enjoy your evening with your family in Morocco. For those listening, got to see the view of where you are. And I'm just like, oh my God, it's gorgeous. Have the best time.
It's gorgeous.
It's so good. Well, all your goodies will be linked in the show notes. Is there anything, any place where you want people to connect with you that's your personal favorite?
Actually, yes. Right now, there's a community that I've started, and this is, I don't know, I just wanted to offer something up, if that's all right.
Please.
It's called Aligned Visionaries. It's my latest project, and the website is alignedvisionaries.com, and it's like a membership space for people who are wanting to put their work out into their world and also explore things from a more maybe inner world perspective. And I believe my business partner set up, she's a lot better at the technical stuff, set up a little code. I don't remember what it offers up, but it's everything belongs.
Amazing. So, I'll just send it to me. Well, I'll put it in the show notes.
I'm having a moment right now where I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, Anais.
Just send me the link. It'll be in the show notes and everyone will know what you're talking about and they can click it and it will be so easy and streamlined.
Lovely. Thank you, Madison.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. Is there anything else before we go?
That's everything.
Amazing. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Everything Belongs. With the number of podcasts and content online and your very full life, I really know the value of your attention and I'm so grateful for every minute that you spend listening to this show and having these conversations echo through your home, your car, your workout, your life. Thank you so much for your time and your attention. If you loved this episode, it would be just such a thrill for me to see you subscribe and leave a 5-star review if you have a couple extra minutes. Whenever you leave a 5-star review on iTunes, what happens is twofold. One, I get to see what you're loving and I get to see what episodes are really resonating with you. And in doing that, you actually provide me information on what kind of guest you want on the show and what specifically you enjoy, where I can create more content that really serves you. And secondly, it helps other people find the podcast, people who might resonate with specific topics like evangelicalism, boundaries, calling your energy back, and really living more fully in your power. So you leaving a review, if it takes 30 seconds, really supports the show and growing and supports me in serving you even better. If you're wanting to find the show notes for today's episode and all previous episodes, you can do so by going to madisonmorrigan.com/podcast. And if you want to get started working with me in a very simple capacity, just dipping your toes into the coaching work I do, the best place to start is the Call Your Energy Back practice. This free journal guide is a 3-step process with a short hypnotic meditation, and it allows you to set energetic boundaries and call your energy back, supporting you to take up all of your rightful space, embody your wholeness, and live with the power that comes when you belong to yourself. If that interests you, you can go to madisonmorrigan.com/energy-back to download it now. This meditation utilizes the brilliance of your subconscious mind and bilateral stimulation, along with powerful coaching questions to support you in releasing the energy and emotions of others, to generate a field of protection all around you, and will leave you feeling full of your true self, powerful, worthy, and whole. And of course, if we're not already connected, please come join me over on Instagram, DM me, and let me know your favorite part of this episode. Until next time, remember that curiosity can be a portal to a life where everything belongs. See you next time.